On June 14, 2012, Lorenzo Johnson, whose wrongful conviction was finally overturned by a federal court, turned himself in to go back to prison, again serving out a sentence of life without parole for a murder in 1995 that he insists he did not commit. After serving more than 15 years of his sentence, with a trail of paper and proceedings through both the state and federal court systems, Johnson's claim of innocence was accepted by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which decided that the state had failed to prove his guilt and ordered him released. After his release, his case went before the U.S. Supreme Court, which ordered him back to prison on May 29, 2012. In this fourth installment of the investigation into his case, we spoke with Lorenzo Johnson this past Sunday about some of the details of a subpoena he received to testify this coming March 27th in the case of his co-defendant.
I'm being subpoenaed because he did feel, I guess, there's a conflict between what's going on with my appeal and his appeal. I don't look at it as a conflict because it's the same goal as, you know, we're both innocent.
So, and the attorney for your co-defendant is Corey Walker, is the co-defendant, is Rachel Walkenstein. She's also one of the attorneys that have represented Mumia Abu-Jamal over the years.
Yeah.
So what is the case that's being tried with Corey Walker that you're being asked to testify in? What is that case about?
Well, basically, you know, I guess it's a disqualification hearing that, you know, the Attorney General feels that, you know, Ms. Wilkinson violated, you know, whatever policies or, you know, formalities between lawyer-client privilege or whatever. And, you know, it's just an excuse in my, to me, it's just an excuse to delay time and take the spotlight off the issue at hand, and that's our innocence.
So what's the nature of the accusation? I mean, I assume it's a canon of ethics issue or something.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Pardon me?
I assume it's, they're charging her with, like, some kind of conflict of interest, like ethics violation or something.
Yeah, something like that. I really don't know fully until I get there. I don't really know. But at the end of the day, for my part, I don't see it as a conflict.
Right.
You know, and I don't see it as a problem, but I believe that, you know, prior things being used to muddy the waters to take the attention off, you know, our innocence, you know. And
right.
I think prior things, I'm going back to the Mumia's case and, you know, things that happened previously that's peripheral to what's going on today.
Right. But that kind of shines a light on the practices that they use.
Exactly. So it's basically, you know, I look at it as a tactic to muddy the waters because, you know, just like we having a hearing from this, we should have a hearing on my innocence.
You know, yeah, perhaps more so. You know, what are the risks? The risks to, if they leave her in place with the alleged ethical violations, the risks are only speculative. You're in prison suffering the damage every day. You would think you would get more of a tip of the hat.
You would figure that, right?
Right.
And you would figure that the prosecution withheld evidence, you know, for almost 20 years now, that's an ethics violation, and that's going against policies and violation of due process and, you know, and things of that nature. But that's not the case at this minute. Don't get me wrong. My appeal's still going on. This doesn't affect my appeal that I have in play. But it delays everything, and how dare you, you know, saying that somebody's not, you know, that violated any codes or anything with anything. The prosecution is there from day one.
You know,
they're continuing to go.
But there's some ghosts in this situation that you're in now. And the state obviously has some interest in separating Corey from his lawyer, which they're pursuing with this action, whatever it is, you can speculate, whatever, but that's clearly a goal that they have. And they're asking you to come in and testify with respect to that. Now, the way you ended up where you are in the first place is they wanted you to testify falsely against someone in connection with the murder, which you weren't even around for. You were in New York when it happened.
And
what happened?
It definitely the same thing, and I'm sitting in the same prison going on 20 years because I wouldn't cooperate with them.
See, now, we saw over in Ferguson this past week, we've been seeing cascading. You know, the Attorney General, for all the other things he failed to do, the Department of Justice issues a report that tells the truth about some of the things that happened in Ferguson. And so you see the police chief resign, you see the judges resign, and all of this. In Pennsylvania alone, there were hundreds of cases like yours, some of them well-known and widely publicized, and you also have that whole prison, you know, pay-for-prison scandal where judges were getting a commission for every kid that they sentenced to a prison that was privately owned. If that came out in an attorney general's report, what kind of reverberations would that have through the state government? I mean, Ferguson has almost no government. Everybody's quitting.
You figure in Pennsylvania, not recently, like last year, a scandal broke within the attorney general's office that prosecuted my case, a pornographic scandal where some of them were sending and receiving pornographic emails and things like that on the government computers.
Right.
And at work they was doing this. And the first person who was resigned was Christopher Abruzzo. Now, Christopher Abruzzo was the trial prosecutor in my case. He is the attorney general that withheld evidence of my innocence and is just coming out 19 years because of him.
Mm.
And this is not being addressed at all, but yet still, we're headed to the courtroom while they're trying to disqualify a lawyer. Like, you know, this is not adding up here. You know, this is not what's going on.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting contrast. Yeah.
You know, when people say, well, how can I put it? You know, there's no way in the world that, you know, this shouldn't be talked about. This shouldn't be addressed.
Right.
But they were sweeping under the rug, and like I told you previously, they muddy the waters and get the attention off the topic at hand.
Mm.
And, you know, the whole thing, like I said previously also, is that, you know, they withheld evidence of my innocence for almost 20 years. And then when I speak about it, and my attorneys filed petitions on my behalf claiming wrongdoing, they blame me for defaming a career cop and a career prosecutor. But these are the people who knowingly and intentionally, maliciously prosecuted two innocent men.
Yep.
So,
yep. Yeah, I mean, the pornography thing it couldn't be better symbolism if you wrote it into a movie, you know.
Say that again?
His association with pornography couldn't better symbolize all of the actions, you know, or the types of actions that he has taken as a prosecutor. If you wrote it in as a part in a movie, you couldn't make clearer symbolism. It's actually quite funny that came out about him and none of the real misdeeds that he's done.
Exactly.
So,
you know, I got to go to court on the 27th, and, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I guess they asked me questions, when did I meet Ms. Wilkinson, or, you know, when have we talked about legal stuff? But at the end of the day, you know, she's an advocate against, you know, injustice. And I speak to everybody and anybody who will listen about my innocence and Corey's innocence. So, you know, just calling me is like, I don't understand what's the goal of calling me for, but at the end of the day, I'm getting subpoenaed and I'll be in court in Dauphin County. Mm. In front of Todd Hoover, my trial judge, who's also, I'm waiting for a hearing date for my appeal. I'll be in this courtroom on the 27th of this month.
You know, I'm wondering, I think maybe our listeners might find it interesting, just, you know, your first-hand view of it. And how long have you been it's Matanoy, is that how you say it?
Say that again?
How long have you been, is it Mahoney, how do you say it, Mahanoy?
Since 2008.
Okay, so that's 7 years. So how many people do you think you've gotten to know there?
A lot. I met a lot of people here, and I met one person who got exonerated last year that was a good friend of mine, Eugene Gilliard, and I met two that's on the brink right now.
Because I'm trying to, have you gotten to know like tens of people, dozens, hundreds, that, you know, could you just give me an idea of scale?
I'm one of many, like, you know, and I always stress this because I'm not the only one. I'm just one that have a mouthpiece and an audience that will listen to me because I became a writer because of this situation.
Right.
It's people that, you know, that's innocent, that, you know, got good chances to go home with representation. It's people that's here that's innocent, that's in the courts, that, you know, they're waiting for decision. And there's some people that's innocent here that have been framed up so bad that, you know, they'll never see society again unless it's on a visit.
Is it unusual to, like, if you met five people, how many of them would you say were probably actually innocent?
I wouldn't say out of five. I'd say out of every 20 you see, you might run into one or two.
One or two that are clearly innocent.
It's certain things that, you know, innocent prisoners could say to each other and the other one to know if he's innocent or she's innocent. Mm-hmm. It's like, how can I say? Like, we could talk and the other one could finish the sentence.
Right.
That type of thing.
Right,
you know?
Similar experience.
Exactly. It's just that, you know, some case might be dealing with DNA, some case might be dealing, you know, with circumstantial evidence, some case might look open and shut, but it's all lies, you know, and it just takes, you know, certain cases to break.
Mm-hmm.
Like in my case right here, like it's a case that was overturned last year, and the guy's name was Kareem Illy, and he pled guilty to a lesser charge because his family forced him to do it, but he was innocent. And his co-defendants went to court last year also, but they went to court for a different issue. And the same detective, Kevin Duffin, in my case, was taking this witness in that case, which was the only witness, just like this case, out to McDonald's every week for coaching.
You have 1 minute left.
That this witness said on the stand.
So that's
this witness said after all these years that everything was a lie.
Right.
The same thing with my situation, but it gets swept under the rug. You never hear about it.
I mean, you can see that's the method of practice. They pick one witness, they cultivate a relationship with them, and they apply pressure at the same time, and they have the example of people like you that wouldn't play ball being behind bars.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, we'll talk about this some more next week. Your court appearance is on the 27th.
So 27th.
That's a week from this coming Friday. Okay, we'll talk about that too. Thank you, Lorenzo. We'll speak with you again next week.
Okay.
We will continue to cover the case of Lorenzo Johnson as it develops.